Good morning, good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Thank you very much. It was wonderful being just quiet in the background, just listening to the wonderful things being shared. Thank you for making, for sharing with us all. And dear brethren, as we're continuing with part three of our presentation on the calendar, of the luminary calendar, but just a brief recap of what we covered last week. Well, previously, the first time we covered the first month, looking through the book of Genesis, and last week we covered the second month, looking through the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 15, to be correct, and again, before I continue that, I encourage you to look at the, to have the calendar, So please have the calendar PDF that I sent you in front of you, because again, it's very important. If you had printed it as I suggested last week, that's great. If you didn't, please follow along. Otherwise, it's not going to be too beneficial to you. I would have to say so much to explain it when a lot of it you can see just by looking. So we looked at the second month and we said, well, if the first month is correct, which started on the fourth day of the week, and the 30th day, which was the last day of the first month, ended on the fifth day or Thursday, then the second month should start on a Friday. And as we looked at through the evidences, the evidence we saw that's exactly what happened. So looking through Exodus chapter 16, we saw that the people traveled from Elim and settled by the command of the Eternal between Elim and Sinai. And they started to, at first they were grumbling about water in the previous chapter, and now they were grumbling about food. Much can be said about that because it's the second year, right, in the second month. So they needed food, and they were grumbling against the Eternal. So the Eternal told Moses that he's heard their groaning, and that in the evening, and he would give them, they would remember, they would know that he brought them out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning, they would see his glory. Now back up a little bit. That day, as it says in Exodus chapter 15, chapter 16, was the 15th of the second month. And it's very important for us to know why he said, you will know this night, tonight, the night of the 15th, that it was he who brought them out of the land of Egypt. Was why? Because it was the time of the second Passover. Remember that if a person failed to keep the Passover in the first month, they were to make sure they kept it on the second month. So the 14th was of that second month was the Passover, and the 15th was the day, the memorial in which they left Egypt. They left Egypt on the 15th in the evening. So here in the second month, which is the second opportunity to keep Passover, Elohim is saying that tonight, tell them tonight of the 15th, you will know that it was Elohim who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Okay, because I had failed to point that out. I want to make sure I point that out today to make sure you understand that it was on the 15th that all of this was happening. And he said, on the next day, you would see my glory. So the next day was the 16th, right? So let's see. So when you jump down to verse 9 and 10, it says, and as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Eternal appeared in the cloud. So it was now the 16th. And what day was the 16th? It was a Sabbath. Did the Israelites know it? No, they did not know it was the Sabbath. They had forgotten those things. That's why Elohim is reintroducing it, or introducing it to them and teaching them how to keep it in great detail in hands-on instruction, which we will not focus, because our focus is not the Sabbath today, but I just want to point that out. And that's how we've figured out the calendar, because he said, yet when Elohim appeared in the morning of the 16th, what did he say to them? He said to them, tonight they will receive meat. And in the morning, the next day, they will gather the manna. So if on the 16th, the evening of the 16th, they're going to get meat, and the next day they're going to get the manna, that means the next day was the 17th of the second month. Very simple. We know he said they will gather it for 6 days between dawn and midday, because by dawn, after dawn, the manna appeared, and by the heat of the day, which like midday, the manna melted. So they had between morning and noon to gather the manna. So for 6 days they gather it. 6 plus 17 is 22. And he said to them, on the sixth day you would gather a double portion, hence 22. And the day before that, don't confuse you, was the last day of unleavened bread. So the 22nd, being a Friday, was, or the sixth day of the week, was the 22nd of the month. And the day following, because he said, 6 days you shall gather it. On the sixth day you'll gather a double portion, and you will save what you will eat for the next day. For tomorrow is a Sabbath, and you shall find none of it. You shall not gather any of it. So the seventh day was the Sabbath. So with this information, we were able to put together the calendar. Look at your calendar now. You can see that the 15th of the second month was indeed a Friday on the calendar. You could just look at it, showing you that the second month we have is correct. The 16th, when Elohim appeared to them, which would make sense, he appeared to them on the Sabbath day, even though they didn't recognize it, yet know it as a Sabbath day. And he told them that the evening of the 16th, they would receive again the meat. And on the next day, which is the seventh day, I'm sorry, which is the first day of the week, the 17th of the month, they were to receive the manna. How do we know for sure it's the first day of the week? How else will we get a Saturday Sabbath? Because it's 7 days. The Sabbath is on the seventh day. So from the 17th, you count 6 days, you'll see that the 22nd, again, as I said, was the sixth day of the week. And on the 23rd was the Sabbath. Perfect. And that's exactly how, what the book of Genesis, Exodus tells us. When we put the information together, it's problem solving. We're given specific information that's sufficient to solve the problem. We're giving the date, we're giving a day, and we're given how many days in between. Very easy. And so once we put our mind together and look at it, then you can see that the second month is correct as shown here. So interestingly, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I found the Bible to be fascinating. And we've heard this over and over. You could read the Bible many times, and there are things suddenly you see that it's like you never saw before, even though you've read, we may have read it several times. So I'm not going to say there's no third month or fourth month information, but I've not found it yet. But what I have found is information about the fifth month to prove that the fifth month as we have it here is correct. But just quickly going back to the second month, as I said, if the first month is correct, then the start of the second month should be on the sixth. And when you look on the sixth day, when you look at our second month calendar, when you look at the second month of the calendar, you will see that the first day does fall on the sixth day of the week. So it is correct. But again, I don't have information about the third month yet, neither, at least not from the Bible, not yet, or the fourth month. But I do have information regarding the fifth month. So the fifth month is an interesting month. The fifth month is what's called its name in among Judaism, the month of Av. And you've probably heard of the ninth of Av. That's a very interesting and poignant time for those who are the who have Judaism as their faith. Why? Because that's the time the temple was destroyed. The temple that Solomon built was destroyed at that time. So, but let's, before I give the detail, let's look at the fifth month. So the fifth month, like the second month, starts on the sixth day. It's basically, it's literally identical to the second month. The fifth month is identical to the second month. It starts on the sixth day of the week, and it ends on a Sabbath day. On the 30th lands on a Saturday, the seventh day of the week. So that's what's going on. And if you look at the 10th, I've highlighted, I don't know if you could see that, the 10th for that reason. Okay? So keep that in mind as we're about to read some text. And then we're going to get some Hebraic historic references to prove the case. Okay? So the first few parts of our study was strictly using the Bible, but today we will use some biblical some historical references to make the point. So let me turn to Jeremiah for a minute. I'll tell you where to go in a minute. Okay. We're going to read about really. I'll read it in your hearing, but I'll let you know the references. Four references. The first is 2 Kings chapter 25, verses 8 to 12. You might want to write this down. The second reference is Jeremiah chapter 52, verses 12 to 16. And the third reference is 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verses 17 to 21. And lastly, a reflection of those events referenced in the aforementioned text is Psalms 137. Okay, so let's begin with the first reference. 2 Kings chapter 25, verses 8 to 12 reads, "In the fifth month, on the seventh of the month, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner, servant of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burnt the temple of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the king's palace, and all the buildings of Jerusalem, and every great house he burned in fire." Okay? Let's see. So let me skip that. I don't need to read the whole portion. I just wanted to... Well, yeah. And all the walls of Jerusalem all around, the entire Chaldean army that was with the chief executioner smashed. The remainder of the people who were left in the city and the defectors who had surrendered to the king of Babylonia and the rest of the masses, Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner, sent into exile. But some of the poor people of the land, the chief executioner left to be workers in the vineyards and in the fields. Quick note, the fifth month, on the seventh of the month. So they came
to the land, to that part of the land, on the seventh of the month. And it speaks about the temple being burned. So they came on the seventh. Then we read about the temple being burnt. So it doesn't say when the temple was burnt, but we could find that in Jeremiah chapter 52, verses 12 to 16. It reads, "In the fifth month, on the 10th of the month, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylonia, Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner, was in the service of the king, came to Jerusalem. He burned the temple in fire, and all the walls of Jerusalem all around, the entire Chaldean army that was with the chief executioner smashed. And some of the poor people, the remainder of the people who were left in the city, the defectors who had surrendered to the king of Babylonia, and the rest of the masses, Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner, sent into exile. But the chief executioner left some of the people in the land to be workers in the vineyards and the fields." So, 2 Kings 25 tells us when exactly they came into the land. Jeremiah 52, 12 to 16 tell us exactly when, on what day, the temple was burned down. Okay? Now, 2 Chronicles 36, 17, 21 gives us a little bit information. "So he brought up against them the king of the Chaldeans." This is Elohim who did that. "So he brought up against them the king of the Chaldeans, who killed their young men by the sword in the sanctuary. He has no pity on lad or maiden, nor on elderly and aged men. Elohim delivered everyone into his hand. All the articles of the temple of Elohim, large and small, the treasures of the temple of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and of the Eternal, and the treasures of the king and his officers. He brought everything to Babylonia. They burned the temple of Elohim, broke down the wall of Jerusalem, and burned down all its places and destroyed all its precious articles. Those who survived the sword, he exiled to Babylonia, where they became slaves to him and his sons until the kingdom of Persia began to reign. This was in fulfillment of the word of the Eternal spoken by Jeremiah, until the land would be appeased of its sabbatical years. All the years of its desolation, it rested to the completion of 70 years. And lastly, a reflection in the Psalms of that event, somber event. Psalms 137 reads, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat, and also we wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows within it we hung our lyres. For there our captors requested words of song from us, with our lyres playing joyous music. Sing for us from Zion's song." Quote, "How can we sing the song of the Eternal in alien soil? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. Let my tongue adhere to my palate. If I fail to recall you, if I fail to elevate Jerusalem above my foremost joy. Remember the Eternal, remember Eternal, for the offspring of Eden, the day of Jerusalem, for those who say destroy, destroy, to its very foundation." So, the fifth month, the 10th of Av, known as Tish Be'av, the 9th of the Judaic month of Av, the date of the destruction of both the first and second holy temples. Judaism looks forward in their understanding to a building of a third temple in the same place, same mount, and they're expecting the Messiah to be there then. you know, on a side note, if this is very telling, as I've in during the Feast of Tabernacles, I did a teaching on the true temple that is one that's not going to be built by man, but by the Messiah, not by man. But interestingly enough, the temple described in Zechariah, which is why there's a lot of people believe this is going to be the second temple, is not even on that spot. It's on another location. A lot of people are not even aware of that. It's not on the same spot. And neither is it of the same dimensions at all of the temple that Solomon built. So that's problematic right there. Just to say on a side note, the hope of a third temple being ushered in, being commanded by Elohim, is not scriptural. Because they want to build this temple exactly where the old one was. And the temple described in the book of Ezekiel is not on the same spot. Okay, so, but you could check that out yourself. But today's focus is the calendar. So here it is. I've read to you what happened on the 9th of Av, 9th and 10th of Av. And now, we could look at the calendar. Let me go back to, we could look at the calendar and see that the 9th of Av was a Sabbath day, and that the 10th, when the temple was burnt down, was on a first day of the week. Now, looking at through historical references, let's see what does history say the 9th and 10th of Av were. Because if our calendar is correct, then the 9th of Av should be a Sabbath day, and the 10th should be a first day of the week. Let's see if that's true by just looking at some history here. Bear with me here. Okay. I'm looking through my references. Oh, looking through my phone here, it's so tiny. The Talmudic references indicate that both temples were destroyed on the same exact day, were burned down exactly on the same day. I'm just looking for my references. All right, let me read this to you. I hope this is where it says it, because I don't want to hold too long. But you could do that check for yourself if my information should fail to include that. I hope it's here. Okay, here goes. I'm going to read this to you. This is from history. When Vespasian left Rome, he left the army in charge of his son, Titus. Late in 69 CE, he brought his catapults, siege towers, and battering rams to the walls. They destroyed the outer wall and then the second inner wall. Then he laid a heavy siege that caused a hunger and pestilence to rage throughout the city. Let's keep reading. While this was happening, the Jewish generals inside the city were still fighting among themselves, slaughtering each other. Finally, the Romans tightened the siege even more until the spring of 70 CE. They were at the last wall. It was breached in the month of Tammuz. The Romans fought their way through the city, but met incredible fierce resistance and suffered enormous casualties from the desperate fighters, but advanced anyway until they surrounded the fortress of Antonius, which guarded the temple. According to Josephus, a Roman soldier took a torch and threw it against the beautiful tapestries that Herod had made for the temple and that hung along its walls. When they caught fire, the Romans attempted to put it out, but there was not sufficient water. Somehow the fire was so intense that even the stone took hold and the building collapsed. The Talmud says that it burned not only in the late afternoon of the 9th of Av, but the entire day of the 10th. It was just a raging conflagration. They were unable to put out the fire, and the entire temple burned, along with thousands of Jews, according to Josephus. Many of the distraught defenders jumped into the flames, feeling that if the temple was going to go up in flames, then the Jewish people were going up in flames. In general, desperation and despair was so rampant that thousands of Jews committed suicide. Let's see here. Oh boy, I think I might have left out this part, but So the temple was set ablaze on the afternoon of the 9th of Av, and it burned through the 10th. I think I referenced the wrong reference here, but I will send you the reference myself in a separate note. I didn't copy and paste it in my document, but it says clearly that the 9th of Av was on a Sabbath day, and that the 10th was on the first day of the week. Okay, I'm just bothered that I didn't copy it in here so I could read it for you. But you could read it in this source, which is jewishhistory.org, Temple Mount, close to Jews. Yeah, that's the one I should have copied for. Let's see if I could see it somehow, if I could get it to show. It's probably not going to happen. I hope it does. No, I can't bring it up. Okay. No problem here. All right, so that's really the presentation for the fifth month, is that history shows, Jewish history testifies that the temple was destroyed, was the fire started on the afternoon of the Sabbath, which was the 9th of Av, and then it burned down, just as Jeremiah said, on the 10th of Av. And interestingly, both temples, the Temple of Solomon and the temple that was rebuilt and later embellished by Herod, was burnt down on the same day. On a Sabbath, it was burnt, and then it caught on fire, and on the 10th day, it burned down completely. So the fact is, based on history, that the calendar does match what history says, that the 9th of Av and the 9th of Av was a Sabbath, and the 10th of Av was a first day of the week. You could check that out yourself, look at those facts for yourself, and you will see that is so. Okay, the 9th of the fifth month was a Sabbath. When you look at our calendar, the 9th of the fifth month is a Sabbath. I want to say, too, that the calendar is a cyclical calendar. It repeats every year and looks pretty much the same from what we can see so far. And that's why when the temple was destroyed again on the 9th of Av, it was also a Sabbath, and that's why it happened on the same day. Because on the self-same day, as the saying would go, because the dates of the months always fall on the same day. The 15th of Av will always be a Friday. The 16th of Av will always be a Sabbath, and the 17th of Av will always be a first day. It doesn't change. So that's pretty much the presentation for the fifth month, to show that historically speaking, the presentation, or the understanding that the fifth month begins on the sixth day of the week and ends on and its 30th day ends on a Sabbath day is accurate, historically speaking. Okay, so any comments? I can take your questions now. And the next time we will be going over look at some more sources of the calendar. Now that's the fifth month. Let me see how much time I have left, if I could cover more. But before I try to cover more, does anyone have any questions before I go to another source? Hi, brother. Again, I don't have all the details from the scriptures to know what the entire calendar looks like. I haven't been able to find all that information yet. But the information we have so far does show that there is a calendar and that it has a specific pattern throughout the Old and New Testament. There are more biblical references we will look at in the future when we try to compare different ideas. And those scriptures will come in handy to refute, because some of the ideas of calendars out there, they claim that the calendar dates must be at a certain place. In other words, must fall on certain days, and which they must. But what happened, their choice of days contradict what the scripture says. So it shows you that their idea is wrong, but the dates that we have on this calendar, none of it contradicts history. None of it. It matches perfectly. And if you change it in any way, it's not going to match. For instance, if you start the first month on the fifth day, it's going to create a problem for the second month. The dates you will get will not, the placement of the dates you get will not match what Exodus told us. But you notice, the second month does match what Exodus chapter 16 says. The days line up properly. And the only way that can happen is if the first month is what it is. If you shift the days in any way in the first month, it will not connect with the second month. The months must flow freely. If they don't flow freely, then we know there's a mistake. So let's look at... Yes. Got you. Yeah, thank you. So just a little side note on the scriptures that Elohim saw fit to give us. If you've noticed, I've said before that the Bible that we have that's been translated for us, Elohim is in charge. He would not let us be deceived. It is a key to understanding all the other scriptures. And let me say something. If you notice, the book of Enoch does not talk about other books. The book of Jubilees does not talk about other books. Only the Bible that we have gives you light that there are other books to look for. You understand? So it is the key. And when we use this, all this other information, the book of Enoch, the book of Jubilees, in light of what the scriptures say, there won't be any controversy, really. There won't be any problem. The reason that there's a lot of problems, a lot of people did not learn about the calendar through the Bible itself.
They learned it through the book of Enoch or through the book of Jubilees and or the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they're coming up with all sorts of ideas and not filtering it through the book that Elohim has certainly given to all the world to know him. And all the other books must fit like a puzzle with the Bible. They cannot contradict each other. But the Bible is the only one who gives the full light. And it gives the full light so everyone can know what the other scriptures are. That way we can't be deceived. Any book that contradicts the what's in the Bible is to be questioned. Why? Because Elohim is not an author of confusion, and Elohim would never let his people down, for to give them hundreds and hundreds of years to have error and have no way of knowing. No, he wouldn't do that to us. So the Bible, even though there were enemies involved, and that's a testimony, as David wrote, in the presence of my enemies, you have set a table before me. So even in the midst, through the hands of those who would be our enemies, he causes them to write what's true. Like when you think of King James, his lifestyle, yet he writes a book, he orders a book to be written that condemns his very lifestyle. So they say about King James. I don't know. But that's to show you that Elohim was in charge. So the Bible is a key to understanding all the other books. And when we filter everything through it, we'll understand it. Anyway, let's look at the book of Enoch. Why do we say, if you notice, the calendar is a 364-day calendar? I would have not known this really fully unless I read the book of Enoch, to be honest with you. There are certain things I wouldn't have known. If we could just put ourselves on mute temporarily. I'm looking at the time, actually. So I'm just going to read a little bit, then I'll stop to take any further questions we might have. Okay. So the portion of the book of Enoch that talks about the luminaries is, it starts in 1 Enoch chapter 72. And it's normally named the Book of the Heavenly Luminaries. And I won't read the whole thing. No way. It's very amazingly detailed. And that's why you will know it's true when you read it, because everything he says is true. It's verifiable. You could actually look at it in the sky and watch it happen if you have the patience. So he describes what he saw, and I'll just summarize it for you. He was with one of the angels, Uriel, and angel of light of El. That's what his name is, Uriel, light of El. And this angel was showing him how the luminaries in the heavens work and how they move. And the first one he covered was the sun. He covers all three mentioned in Genesis, the sun, the moon, and the stars. But he starts off with the sun. And he talks about how the sun moves through six portals in the sky. There are six portals, and it spends it moves through each one, beginning from the middle, between the third and fourth portal. Okay, and the sun spends 30 days in each one, then transitions to the next. When it reaches the sixth, then it starts going, it travels from the middle southward, then it travels back northwards. I'm sorry, south, yes, north, it travels back northwards, correct. And so that's how the season, so it goes back and forth between seasons, back and forth. And if you looked at that video that I sent you, that short clip with the video, you will see a stop motion capture of that event. Someone had captured the movement of the sun over the course of a year and a half, I think. And you will see it move from one portal to another, just as the book of Enoch says. These things are verifiable. And for you to understand, this book was written, the book of Enoch is older than any of the books we know of. The book of Jubilees, these records are older than the sources we get our New Test, our Old and New Testaments from. So this, the writer had no instrument, no telescope, nothing, but yet somehow knew these truths. So we have to this is, these are the testimony as why you can know that the book of Enoch is scripture, because people back then could not have known that. And all the ancients, all the critics say the same thing, to the point where this must have been written much later. But then, of course, when the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, they saw, oh no, these things were written a long time ago. So anyway, so that's how it goes. So the sun moves from portal to portal. It spends 30 days in each one, literally. And then it goes to the next portal. That's how you know that the months are created by the sun. And it does that for 12 times. So you'll get 360 days, 12 times. Plus, as our brother Willard, there are four intercalary days, which are placed between each season, spring, summer, fall, and winter. So it travels between these. So the 360 days plus the four intercalary days for each season makes it a total of 364 days in a year. Some have trouble with that because we're told today it's 365 days. There's no qualms about this. This book was written many years, thousands of years ago. And it says that in the last days that the luminaries will start to not function as well. They would start being out of course a little bit from time to time. And the agriculture, the food sources, the things of earth would be troubled. And we know Messiah said the same thing when in Matthew 24 and others. So Enoch already said that. So the luminaries, they're altering their course a little bit, just as he said. Okay? So there's no contradiction there, but the calendar must remain the same. We who know Elohim must keep it as he gave it. So Enoch says that the last day of the year will end on the day when day and night are equal. So the 364th day will be when day and night are equal. There are other signs, but that's one sign. The signs don't contradict each other. That's one sign that's very key, and it's stated very plainly. The year will end when the day and night are equal. Okay, so that's what we normally call here the vernal equinox or the spring equinox, because there's the equilox. Some people will argue the equilox is exactly equal, but the problem with the equilox is that it's only a local event. You cannot have the calendar based on a local event. The global event is the equinox, and that's why most people from generations past till today favor the using the equinoxes and winter and solstices. So there are two equinoxes, spring and fall, and there are two solstices, summer and winter. The equinoxes are when the sun is in the middle of the portals, right? Either go getting hot or either moving back to getting cold. And the solstices are summer or winter. That's when the sun reaches its extreme heat or its max heat on Earth, or its maximum cold. Either way, these are solstices. That's the difference between the equinoxes and the solstices. Equinox is always in the middle. Solstices are the polar opposites, extreme warmth or extreme cold. So, and according to Enoch, in chapter 72 and 73, the year must be 364 days. Let's look at our little picture, and then I'll make some brief comments, and then we will conclude to take questions. So if you look at the calendar as a whole, let me shrink mine a little bit. I'm using my phone, and everything's like tiny. Okay, so let's look at what the calendar looks like, the arrangements. So if you notice, on the left-hand side, you have the seasons. No, you have year one, then you have days of the week, which are 1 through 7, repeated 3 times. And then, because that's how the seasons are set up, then you have spring, Aviv. Now, people think, and traditionally too, that Aviv is the first month. Aviv is not the first month. Aviv is all 3 months, biblically speaking. Because Aviv is the season, but the first month is called Aviv because it's the first month where Aviv starts. But all of it is Aviv, because Passover must be held in spring, in Aviv. And that's why it's allowed even in the second month. For you to think about, it's allowed in the second month because it's still spring, it's still Aviv. So the next you see is summer. The summer begins with the fourth month, and it includes the fourth, fifth, and sixth. Let me go back. The spring includes the first, second, and third month. That's Aviv. Then we have, summer, which is what? Kayitz, and it begins with the fourth month. Fourth month, fifth, and sixth. Then you have autumn, which begins in the seventh month. Now and then you have the 10th month. Okay? Altogether, from month one, from the start of month one to the end of month, the 12th month, is 364 days. If you look at the months 1, months 4, 7, and 10, they are identical. If you look at months 2, 5, 8, and 11, they're identical. And the same with month 3, 6, 9, and 12. They're identical. Elohim made it very, very easy to know the months. It's 30 plus 1 day for each season. 30 plus 1 day for each season. That's if you look, that's how it is. So it's easy to put together when you understand it. What else can I say here about this? If you look at all the official fastings of the relationship fasts, I call them relationship fasts, are always on the first month, fourth month, seventh month, and 10th month. Highlighted in red, circled in red. The 10th days of each of those months, 1, 4, 7, and 10, are fast. And then you could find that in the scripture yourself. And they will always be on the 10th day. Now, we covered today the 5th month, which happened to be the 10th day fell on a Sunday. And it's not a relationship fast. This is not a fast that Elohim commanded. It is a fast that the children of Israel took upon themselves. Well, I should say Judaism took upon itself because it was cast out. It's their own decision. It's not a decision from Elohim. Elohim does not have a fast of the 5th month, to my knowledge. I could be wrong. You could correct me. That's not really significant. But I just wanted to point out to you that Jews normally would not fast on another date. But because this happened on the 10th, on a the temple was destroyed on that day, they fast on that day. But the biblical fasts are always on the sixth day of the week, and it's always on the 10th in the, again, the first month, fourth month, seventh month, and 10th month. And even the apostolic teachings, when Brother Richard goes back to doing that, once we're done with the calendar, you will see that there are parts of that that will testify to that, that the ancient church continued that practice. They continued fasting on the 10th of the week and on the 4th of the week. Okay? So I will stop here. There's so much to be said, but we'll save that for another time. So I'll stop here to take questions you may have. Thank you.